You're listening to the City Lights Podcast. City Lights is a church located in Greenville, South Carolina, devoted to building family, blessing neighbors, and bringing good news to the nations. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I'm a fan of Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if you're familiar with his stories, the tales written by Arthur Conan Doyle about a fictional detective named Sherlock Holmes. Love the stories, love the adventures that are captured in his stories. There is some really sweet interaction between Holmes and Watson, his best friend. And in one of the early tales called A Scandal in Bohemia, Holmes asks a question of Watson. They share an apartment at 221 B Baker Street. And he asks Watson, you've come up and down the stairs oftentimes into this apartment. Can you tell me how many stairs there are? And Watson goes, I don't know. And Holmes goes, there's 17 exactly. And he explains to Watson the thing is that you see, but you don't observe. You've looked, but you haven't really paid attention. Let's do this. Close your eyes. How many rows are there in the center section here in church? Keep your eyes closed. How many rows are there in the center section? And how many seats are in each row? You can open your eyes now and take a look and go, I don't know how many rows there were. You have to look and count. Now, that's not the most important thing that you need to take away this morning, but here it is. You've walked in many, 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 many Sunday mornings, and you have your particular place that you come to sit, but you've seen the rows, but you haven't really noticed. You haven't really paid attention. You didn't notice there were six rows and six seats in each row in the center section. I walked in and I noticed that. Why? Well, part of it is because I was going to use it as an illustration this morning, but nevertheless, there's this thing that happens that sometimes we see things but really don't pay attention. I want you to keep this in mind as we turn to a passage in the Gospel of Mark. Why? Because of our familiarity with Jesus and the fact that, well, we know the stories and we know the things that he does. It's possible, it's easy, in fact, to open up the Gospels, to read a passage and kind of like, oh, I know this. And we don't pay attention to the details. And if we don't pay attention to the details, then we might actually miss what's going on there. The Spirit of God actually inspired words to be written. Not just ideas, not just concepts, but very words. And the only way for us to make sure that we grasp what the biblical text is saying is if we pay attention to the very words that are written. And so that's what I want you to do this morning. We're going to be in Mark chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. Here's the thing you need to know. These words, not this copy, but these words are the most important thing that we will talk about this morning. Not my words. I don't want you to come away with my thoughts. I want you to be able to open the book, get your nose in the page, pay attention to the words, because these words are life-changing. And there is something for us in the Spirit-inspired words here in the pages of Scripture. So we're in Mark chapter 9. We're going to start in verse 14. I'm going to read with you 14 through 29. Then we're going to talk and think well about what's going on in this passage. Mark chapter 9, starting in verse 14. And when they, that's Jesus and three of the disciples, who had gone up the mountain, when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them. And scribes were arguing with them, and immediately all the crowd, when they saw Jesus, they were greatly amazed, and they ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, what are you arguing about with them? And someone from the crowd answered him and said, Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able. And he answered them, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me. And they brought the boy to him, and when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy. And he fell to the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And the father said, from childhood. And it has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, if you can, all things are possible for one who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, I believe, help my unbelief. And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, you mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he'd entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? And he said to them, this kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. Now, this is a narrative. A narrative needs to be read as if it's an actual event. These things actually happen. This is not a parable. It's not an allegory. It's not a really picturesque story. This actually happened. So we're going to press on it as if it's an actual event that happened. I want you to pay attention to the details that are given there. Jesus and the disciple, three of the disciples have gone up on the Mount of Transfiguration. That was last week's message. We're going to talk about what happened on the mountain. And now those three with Jesus are coming down from the mountain, and they encounter this little exchange going on where a man has brought his son to the disciples, and now there's this debate going on. Now, ESV renders it, the scribes were arguing with the disciples. Well, a really good tool, concordance. Pick up a concordance, look at where words are used. Although that idea of arguing is not a bad rendering of the word, but I don't want you to think like they're fighting words. It's actually a word that means to debate, to discuss. There's a serious discussion going on between the scribes and the disciples. I don't want you to think of the scribes as like blackguards, guys in black hats and black garments, and the somber music plays every time they walk onto the scene. No, the scribes are religious people who have genuine questions. And so they've got some questions for the disciples. What might explain the fact that they're debating, discussing with the disciples? Well, what have the disciples been doing? Back in Mark chapter 3, Jesus said that he was going to call those whom he wanted to be with him so that he can send them out to heal sick, cast out demons. And then in Mark chapter 6, they actually go out and do that. So the disciples have been doing this kind of thing. Why'd the man bring his son to the disciples? Because they'd done this kind of thing before. And now the father brings his son to the disciples, and how's it gone? Not very well. So discussion arises, some debating between the scribes. Hey, you've been able to do this, and now you're not able to do this? I think that's at the heart of what this debate, this argument is going on. Why aren't you helping the man? Why can't you help the man? So Jesus and the three come down from the mountain and ask what's going on. And the man explains the situation. He says, teacher, I brought my son to you, for he is a spirit that makes him mute. Verse 18, whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able to. So how does the man explain the situation? I have this problem with my son, demonization, and I brought him to your disciples. He had the expectation the disciples would be able to do something about it, and apparently they failed. They didn't do very well with it. So we need to pay attention to how Jesus responds to this. After the man explains this, notice verse 19, Jesus replies. Jesus answered and says to them, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me. Now, we've got to listen to what Jesus is saying here. And the first thing he says is, O faithless generation. That's a word that appears just once in Mark's gospel, this idea of faithless. And what does it mean? It means somehow someone is lacking in belief, and I have to wrestle with who's lacking in belief. Is he referring to the man? Is he referring to the crowd? Is he referring to the scribes? Is he referring to the disciples? It's not clear. Jesus apparently is aware that there is something missing in some of these people. Oh, faithless generation. So we need to read a little bit farther and hear what Jesus is saying to pick up on what his point is. Jesus is concerned that some might be lacking in faith, but what does he then go on to say? He says, how long am I to be with you? Now, how do you hear that? When Jesus says, how long am I to be with you? Apparently, he's thinking that there's a time limit coming. Go back to Mark chapter 8. Jesus says for the first time to these disciples who he's been walking with for 3.5 years, I'm going to go to Jerusalem and I'm going to die and your relationship with me is going to change. He's been with them for 3 years or more. And now he's told them just a previous chapter, our relationship is going to change. I'm leaving in a really difficult way. I'm going to be killed. I'm going to die. And then as they're coming down the mountain, if you go back to Mark chapter 9, first part of Mark chapter 9 that was taught last week, you'll notice that Jesus was talking to the three about his upcoming death. So when Jesus is thinking, he's thinking about his death. He's thinking about the change in relationship. So when he says, how long am I to be with you? What do you think he has in mind? I think he's thinking, our relationship is going to change. I've been with you for 3 years or more, and I've been investing in you, and I've been walking with you, and I've been teaching you, and I've been training you, and now that's not going to last much longer because things are going to change. How long am I going to be with you? Could he be thinking about his soon approaching departure? I think so. And then, notice what he adds to that. He says, how long am I to bear with you? Now, I don't know about you, but I wish the gospel writers could have given us more of the inflection with which Jesus said that. Do you think he's throwing up his hands and going, how long am I going to be with you? Is that consistent with the character of Jesus that we've seen in the Gospel of Mark? No. You might feel that way about your kids, but I don't know that Jesus feels that way about the disciples. There are a number of times when it's sweet to watch where Jesus seems to recognize that the disciples are slow on the uptake. I just really think that's a really honest observation. Sometimes the disciples just don't get it, right? He's talking to the Samaritans in John's Gospel, chapter 8, and the Samaritans go, we know who you are. You're the promised Messiah. And the disciples in the boat, when Jesus comes to storm, they're going, who is this that even the wind and sea obey? So they're slow on the uptake. I'm really encouraged by that, that Jesus doesn't, in those moments when the disciples don't seem to be tracking, he doesn't go, Father, I'm done with these. Can I have 12 more? And so when he says, how long will I bear with you? Again, that's a word that only appears here in the Gospel of Mark, this idea of bearing with you. And you might think of it as he's frustrated, he's done with them, but I'm not sure that's what he's saying. That word there about bearing with comes up a couple of times in the epistles, and one of the places is in Thessalonians where Paul talks about his bearing up under trouble. And then in Colossians chapter 1, he says we're supposed to bear with one another. That doesn't mean I don't want to sit with you, but I'm going to put up with you. That isn't what is being talked about in Colossians. It's about supporting and encouraging. So when he says, how long will I be able to bear you up? I think Jesus is thinking about his soon departure, the time that I've spent with you, and I'm not going to be around to carry you through moments like this much longer. Tracking with me? I'm just trying to pay attention to the words Jesus said without just skipping over them. In my Bible, it has a heading here. It says, Jesus heals a boy with an unclean spirit. You know, if Mark wanted you to know that Jesus healed a boy with an unclean spirit, Mark would have written, Jesus delivered a boy with an unclean spirit. Take a whole sentence. We got a lot more than that, so there's more going on here, so we need to pay attention. When the gospel writer gives us a close-up and gives us details, it's important for us to pay attention to the details because those things matter. So Jesus is speaking and says, hey, I'm not going to be with you much longer. I'm not going to be around to continue to hold you up. But there's this need. So he asks, bring the boy to me. So let's watch what unfolds as the man brings his son. The man brings his son. The boy immediately falls into convulsions. The spirit comes upon him. The boy convulses, falls to the ground. And verse 21, Jesus asked his father, how long has this been happening? Now, again, if you've been reading through the Gospel of Mark, that's a really startling thing because Jesus typically doesn't have conversations with demons or about demons. This is the only time that he asks this kind of question. How long has this been happening? He asks the Father that. And I think it's a legitimate thing to ask, why is Jesus asking the question? I think Jesus wants to know something. I know that when we're among a bunch of Christians and we think about Jesus in his incarnation, there is a tendency to default to his divinity and suggest that in his days of the incarnation, he walked as God on the planet rather than as God incarnate. Did he walk as a man? Yes, I do not believe the scriptures teach that Jesus exercised omniscience when he ministered. He says things like, I only do the things I see the Father doing. I do nothing of my own initiative. In fact, in Mark, a little later, we're going to get to Mark when Jesus is on the mountain and talking to the disciples about the future. The disciples ask him, when is this going to happen? And he says, I don't know. Only the Father knows. I don't know. And so there are times when Jesus asks questions when I think he actually needs to know. Apparently, there's something strange about this demon that the disciples were not able to handle. So why is Jesus asking a question? Because I think he longs to understand something about this particular demonic problem so that he might know how to address it. So he asks the question, and the man answers and explains. He's learning something about the demon problem. And then the man says a really interesting thing after explaining it. Notice what he says at the end of verse 22. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. The man really wants his son delivered. He says, if you can do anything, have compassion and help us. And listen to Jesus' reply. If you can. All things are possible for the one who believes. Listen to what Jesus is saying. When Jesus says, if you can, what's the implication? Well, the man says to Jesus, if you can do something, Jesus goes, if you can, well, you're suggesting, if I can? And notice what he says. All things are possible to the one who believes. Now, I don't know how you hear those words. I think sometimes I hear those words the way the man responded. The man responds by saying, I believe, help my unbelief. We might pray that kind of prayer. But did you notice the man doesn't do anything? Jesus says to the one who believes, this is possible. But the man doesn't deliver his son. The disciples don't deliver his son. Who actually does anything? Jesus. So when Jesus says, all things are possible to the one who believes, and then he delivers the boy, what is Jesus telling us about himself? Apparently he believes. Whatever that might mean for Jesus, apparently he's not. He doesn't tell, when the man says, if you, I believe, help my unbelief, Jesus doesn't look at him and say, so up your belief and cast the demon out of your boy. He doesn't suggest that if the man actually has more faith, that the man himself could do something. The question was, Jesus, can you do anything? And Jesus goes, well, yes, because all things are possible to the one who believes. And apparently Jesus is the one who believes because he's the one that does something. Are you paying attention? Listening carefully to what's going on in this text, it's really easy to read this text and go, I know, Jesus cast out demons. But there's more going on. He's explaining something about how this ministry is happening. So he tells the man, if you can, all things are possible to him who believes. The believing one can do this. And then watch what Jesus does. He speaks to the demon and says, leave him and never enter him again. Again, that's new language for Jesus. If you've been traveling through the Gospel of Mark, you've not heard him say that kind of thing to a demon before. Leave him and never come into him again. Now you have to think, why might he be saying that? The way the man described the demon problem apparently wasn't an ongoing demon problem. Like the guy in the tombs, you remember the guy in the tombs back earlier in Mark's Gospel? Like he had an ongoing problem. He's running around naked, cutting himself, chained. And so it was an enduring demonic problem. Apparently, this is an on again, off again, on again, off again. In fact, the demon didn't throw the boy into convulsion until Jesus showed up. So apparently, Jesus is dealing with this differently. This is an episodic kind of demonic problem. That's why he's asking. That's why he says, leave and never come in again. So, this is the episode. These are the details that are given us. Now, there's more to be talked about here, but before we talk about what the implications are of all of this, I want to make sure that you really grasp this moment in time described in the narrative that we've walked through. So, do you have any questions about what we just walked through or what actually happened in that moment in time? Do you have any questions about what Mark told you and how it actually happened? And when I say if you have any questions, I really mean if you have any questions, it'd be great for you to ask them. If there's anything in this passage that we just walked through that you kind of go, what about this or what about that? Love to have you. Louder, please. Is it why they were disciples not able to? We'll get to that in a second because the end of the verse, the disciples actually asked that question, why they were not able to. So we will get to that. Yes. Yes? That's correct. There's no indication in the text that Jesus glows in the dark. It's what?
Everything seems like a Tuesday where they come in.
Yeah. That's correct. Now, it does say, Mark does tell us that they saw him and they were amazed. The word means puzzled and surprised. Perhaps, Mark doesn't give me all the details. There are some times when you're wrestling with a text, it doesn't answer all your questions. Got to be really okay with that, right? It doesn't answer all my questions, but it does say that they were amazed. The language means that they were puzzled and surprised. Perhaps, and this would be my suggestion, perhaps, with the nine, they were thinking something would happen, and now nothing has happened. So when they see Jesus coming down, it's like, oh, now something might happen. I don't think he was glowing. I don't think he was floating above the ground.
I do think that the crowd saw him knowing the disciples had failed and maybe Jesus would be able to be help. Yeah. Good. Good. What else? Yes.
At the end, when the disciples asked him, why was
he... We'll get there. Don't go there. We're not there yet. We're just talking about the episode. Okay, you're going to the end. Great. I love that you're going there. I want to ask questions about the episode itself before we get to the end. Yes, we'll get there in a second. We'll get there in a second. That's correct. How long will I, NAS, I mean ESV renders it, bear with you? And if we render it put up with, we got to be really careful that we don't make that sound snarky. I don't think Jesus is being snarky. And like I said, the other place that word appears, it has to do with support and encouragement rather than mere tolerance. So I really think that what Jesus is talking about there is, I'm not going to be with you very much longer. How much longer will I be here to bear you up, to hold you up? And I think that's a legitimate issue for Jesus because he's anticipating his soon departure. Yes? Well, maybe. And again, Mark doesn't answer fully for me that, but when Jesus asks him the question, how long has this been happening, clearly it wasn't a continual thing because the boy wasn't thrown into convulsions until Jesus showed up. So the disciples had not experienced that. The disciples had not seen that. And when Jesus asks, how long has this been happening, I think he's not asking necessarily about a sin question, but is this a recent demonic problem or is this a long-standing demonic problem? Because then I think they have to be dealt with differently. And that's why I think Jesus says, leave him and never come back. I think because perhaps it's been cyclical. And hence the reason why the question, how long has this been happening?
So here he says, the Lord's daughter cried out, I do believe.
Yes. Yes.
That's always been personal for me is saying, well, I do believe you, Jesus, but I help the part of me that doesn't believe.
And that's not a bad thing to pray. I'm simply saying, I don't think that's what's really the heart of what's going on in this passage. Because Jesus' reply is to say, if I can, all things are possible to the one who believes. Apparently, Jesus is not telling the man, you just need to believe more. Jesus is actually saying, the one who believes is actually going to do something, and it's not the man who does anything. I just want to, do you ever take verses out of context? I'm not... I hear that sometimes Christians do that, take verses out of context. And so I'm not suggesting that that's a bad prayer to pray, but in this context, I do not think Jesus is telling the man, if you only believed more, then I can do something.
Well, it's not bad. He's saying, the man's saying to Jesus, help my unbelief. He's acknowledging that just that part of him that doesn't believe.
Doesn't believe what? Don't know. That's correct.
Would it be more appropriate for the disciples to say, we believe, help our unbelief?
Maybe. We're going to try to understand what's going on with the disciples. Oh, this is so good that you're asking questions.
So the father tells him about
the boy. Yes.
Jesus cast the demon out and he said, mute and
death. That's correct.
Where did he get that part?
He read the verses. We're not told where Jesus got that information. Yes? Apparently. I don't know that it happened all within a 6-minute period of time. Probably. I don't think it was days. I think it was perhaps minutes, maybe an hour, between the time when the dad brought his son to the disciples and they tried and weren't able, and Jesus comes down the mountain, and then they have a conversation. I do think it plays out over a small period of time. Interesting. We're going to get there in just a second. See, you're all starting to think really well. Good. Yes? Is that what this passage is about? Is that what this passage is about? See, sometimes we try to use texts to teach things that are right, but are not what is in view in the text. Is this text primarily about the man coming to more belief? I don't think so. I don't think that's what's at the heart of this text. It is really about what Jesus does in the midst of this moment. So we got to wrestle with that.
So it's mainly about like how Jesus handles when someone comes to him. Because that's just sticking with people.
Yes. Yes. No. That is really good. All right. So you got your hands on a moment, right? This event. We do have to wrestle with the question, why does Mark tell us this? Why tell us these details? Because if you've been traveling through the Gospel of Mark here on Sunday mornings, how many of you know that Jesus cast out demons? Yeah, he does that. How many of you know that the disciples have done that? Great. So why are we being told this story? Because we already know that that can happen. So why these details? There's something going on here. Let's finish and read. Chapter 9, starting at verse 28. And when he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? And he said to them, this kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. Now, first question, why did the disciples ask that question? Why could we not cast it out? Why would they have asked that question? Because they'd been doing it, right? Why couldn't we cast this one out? And Jesus answered and says, you have to bring these to me. I'm the only one who can. No, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. Isn't that surprising? He doesn't say, you'll have to bring these to me. Notice Jesus' answer. What does he say? This kind doesn't come out except by prayer. But did you notice there is nothing in the text that tells us that Jesus, the man brings his son, the boy falls into convulsions, Jesus bows his head or kneels down and prays. He doesn't. So what can possibly mean when Jesus says this kind cannot come out except by prayer? There is no indication that Jesus was in that moment praying. So what might that mean when Jesus says, well, this kind only comes out by prayer? If Jesus does what he does, he tells us in John chapter 14, I do nothing of my own initiative. I only do the things I see the Father doing. I only say the words the Father gives me to say. In the Gospel of Matthew, we read that Jesus says that he casts out demons by the Spirit of God. So when Jesus does ministry, is he doing ministry out of his own volitional divine person? No, I don't think so. I think it's very clear as you move through the Gospels that Jesus is in this ongoing relationship with the Father, and the things that he does on the initiative of the Father and in the power of the Spirit. So when Jesus says, this kind doesn't come out except by prayer, I don't know that he's saying it doesn't happen unless you pray in the moment, but it only happens if you're prayed up. I think that's what Jesus is saying. Well, this kind doesn't come out except by prayer. Jesus, in that sense, is prayed up. Maybe the disciples weren't. Maybe they were waiting for Jesus and weren't really attentive, and a need arose and they weren't ready to respond to it, and they hence were not able to respond. I think about that idea about prayed up when I was speaking to Oliver about coming on a Sunday morning to teach here. I asked him where you were, and he said the Gospel of Mark. Well, both my graduate degrees, I spent time in the Gospel of Mark. I've spent literally hundreds and hundreds of hours in the Gospel of Mark. And so when he said, yeah, we're in the Gospel of Mark, I was like, I'm marked up. What I meant by that is not that I'm flippant about it, but I'm very familiar with the Gospel of Mark. I've spent a lot of time reading and listening and studying in the Gospel of Mark. I am very glad to talk. Drop me in anywhere in the Gospel of Mark, and I'm marked up. Now, if he said, we're in the book of Deuteronomy, I'm not Deuteronomy'd up. I would have to do a lot of preparation because I would be ready to open up somewhere in the book of Deuteronomy and teach. I wonder when Jesus says this kind doesn't come out except by prayer, I don't know that he's talking about a moment of prayer, but maybe a life of prayer, a kind of dependence. If you're living in that kind of life, then a need arises and you're able to respond to it. Jesus is able to respond to it because he's a believing one. He's one that's living in dependence on the Father, and he is living a life of prayer and conversation. Since he's the believing one and he's prayed up, then the need arises, and oh my goodness, he can respond to it. He's in step. In the New Testament, we're told a number of times, 1 Thessalonians, pray occasionally. No, that's not what it says. pray on Sunday morning? No, it says pray without ceasing. Is there supposed to be this ongoing momentum of prayer in our lives? Absolutely. Should you be prayed up, or should you, facing a moment of challenge or ministry or need, now start to pray? Oh, I really need to pray now. Why are you waiting then to pray? It'd be really difficult to pray up enough in the moment to be able to address a particular need. Ephesians chapter 6, where Paul is actually writing about spiritual conflicts, he says, pray at all times in the Spirit in order to fight the spiritual battles. He doesn't say, and when you encounter a demonic presence, then you should start praying. No, he says, pray at all times, praying in the Spirit. So when Jesus says this kind doesn't come out except by prayer, I wonder if what he's talking about is living in a milieu of prayer. Living as one who is really depending, really believing, and hence when the ministry moment arises, then you would be able to step into it. I will just tell you from my own experience, I've had a few encounters with people who are demonized. And I don't know how you think about that, but you have probably encountered people who are demonized. You might not have recognized it, you might not have known what to do about it, but candidly, if you encountered a demonized person and you weren't prayed up, and you weren't living in that dependent kind of relationship, you would not know what to do. And I've had moments where, in fact, I've encountered someone who's demonized, and the Lord has been very gracious, and I've seen deliverance happen. But I have had some moments where I was a little too concerned about getting my bagels, and the woman in the New York bagel shop was clearly having more than just an emotional problem, and I wasn't attentive, and I wasn't praying, and I didn't want to step into that, and I wasn't prayed up in that way, and so that was a ministry moment that just passed me by. I wonder if that's what's going on with the nine. There is something really important for us to recognize that Mark tells us this account. So, why? Why, Mark, are you telling us this? Now that we understand what's going on, we understand the exchange that Jesus has and the things he says, then we have to ask the question, why are you telling me this, Mark? Because I already know Jesus casts out demons. I know the disciples do that. What am I supposed to learn from this? Let me suggest a couple of things. The first thing is, the journey of a participating disciple is incremental. What I mean by that is, Jesus intends for the disciples to do this kind of thing. Are they doing it perfectly? No. But Jesus doesn't throw up his hands and chastise the nine. So the journey of a participating disciple is incremental. You grow into this. You continue to grow into this. And I take huge encouragement from that. I've been walking with the Lord for a really long time, and I am still learning about what it means to participate and join him in what he's doing. And it's really sweet to see that Jesus doesn't blow the nine off and go, you'll never be able to do this. No, you're just all failure. No. The journey of a participating disciple is incremental. If you walk through the Gospels, you'll notice that. They are growing and coming to understand more and more about what it is to participate with Jesus. That's the first thing I see here. Because they get the attention. Yeah, the episode is about the deliverance of the boy. But a lot of it has to do with the nine, what Jesus says to them and what they are or not able to do. So I like to see this idea that the journey of a participating disciple is one of incremental growth. The second thing is, going along with that, the other side of that is Jesus really does anticipate his followers, as they grow, they are going to become more and more effective in what they do. He never tells them, you'll never be able to do that kind. That kind is just too challenging for you. No, he goes, yeah, done. There's something about prayer that you'll need to learn, but you'll be able to do that. He doesn't dismiss it. He doesn't tell them they'll never be able to. So the flip side of the journey of a disciple is incremental is to see that Jesus is very convinced that his disciples are actually going to grow and experience more and more of what he wants for them. And then the third thing we've already touched on, maybe prayer is more than asking in the moment what it is that you might do, but more a way of being with the Lord. Maybe believing is more than just in the moment when a need arises, I'm going to try to really believe in this moment. Maybe believing is more a kind of life. Maybe praying is more a kind of life rather than a momentary in the moment kind of panicked response. You've probably never had those moments. I've had those moments where need arises and now it's panic. I haven't been talking to the Lord for days. I really need to talk to him about this. But if in fact we lived in the milieu where we were believing ones, like Jesus, and we were living in the milieu when we were praying ones like Jesus, maybe then when needs arise in the lives of others that you're brought into contact with, maybe you'd be able to step into that moment and participate with God in what he is doing to the good of others and to his glory. I think that's what this text is about. And I think that has massive implications for your lives and my lives as followers of Jesus.
Thanks again for joining us. If you have been encouraged or challenged by this message, please give us feedback by leaving a comment on this podcast. For more information on our church, visit us at www.citylights.cc.